Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me, as ever.
As always, Mike Cosentino, that's right, co-host of Democratic Perspective this morning on a nice chilly morning.
A nice chilly morning. My internet connection says 32 degrees out there, which is cold for us.
And if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Yes, absolutely. We have a caller today from Phoenix, where I assume it's much warmer. And he's the executive director of the Arizona Advocacy Network, Sam Wierczynski. Are you there, Sam?
Good morning, Steve. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Sam.
Good to talk to you again. You're the executive director of Arizona Advocacy Organization. Tell us a little bit about it. Let's start by just giving us some background. It was formed in 98 and 2002 it was incorporated, so it's been around a while.
It's a very cool organization. We get that up front. It's a very cool thing you do got down there. Yeah, tell us about it.
Well, thanks, Steve, and thanks, Mike, for that thumbs up. Arizona Advocacy Network really is all about securing electoral justice and political rights for the people of Arizona. We like to focus on first and foremost those communities and individuals that historically have been marginalized or disenfranchised here in Arizona. That includes our Native community, our Native American community, Latino and African American communities. You know, ultimately what we fight for is to achieve government of, by, and for the people, not corporations.
That's the Arizona legislature sometimes seems, and we can say things that you can't, by the way, and I'm going to say them.
It's a non-partisan organization.
Yeah, good.
I would say progressive, but non-partisan, right, Sam?
Yeah, and
progressive in the sense that you're trying to have electoral reform.
Well, we've mentioned on the show before that anybody takes a reasonable approach to politics is progressive, especially in Arizona. So when you have an almost exclusive club down there called the Arizona Legislature that OBL, by the way, is supposed to be government of, by, and for the people, that makes organizations like yours even more special.
If you stand at a crosswalk, you're progressive, right?
That's right.
Okay, so tell us about electoral justice aspect of the thing you do. What's the problem there as Arizona Advocacy sees it?
Well, electoral justice and political rights go hand in hand, and what we do to ensure that citizens have an equal opportunity to participate in our election system as well as our government, that their voices are heard both on election day and after the officials are sent to the Capitol to represent us, whether it be in Arizona or Washington, that there's those equal opportunities. And today, as both of you know and your listeners know, there just isn't that equal opportunity. So we focus on three areas. One is campaign finance reform, and that means strengthening the Clean Elections Act, which voters passed in 1998, and increasing disclosure. That's our first priority. The second is to ensure our voting rights are protected, expanded, and through that, modernize our elections. And finally, if individuals are supporting officials that are passing laws or passing statutes on the ballot, which is very popular in Arizona, we need to ensure that we have fair courts who are going to interpret the intent of what voters want at the ballot box to ensure, again, that that this policy is held and put in place and held there for the people.
Well, taking them backwards, the constitutional citizens' initiatives, the referendums, the initiative rights, that's, once again, I'm just in awe, and it's huge. But so people work, they get a question on the ballot, and yet there are still barriers because of Arizona's judicial personnel, judges, that get in the way?
Well, you know, I think Arizona is fortunate in that we really do have a very fair and impartial judiciary. Three of the 15 counties, the three largest counties, utilize the merit selection system, which voters passed in 1974. Yavapai County will more than likely be entering the merit system in 2020 after the next census shows that it has a population of 250,000 or greater. That particular system also decides who our Supreme Court and appellate judges are. And that's where we see the greatest threat in other states that don't utilize merit. So Arizona Advocacy Network and our allies, many of whom are in Yavapai County, like the League of Women Voters, are very strong in Yavapai County and your communities.
Great organization.
We work together to protect Arizona's merit selection system from the political attacks that we've seen in the past, whether it be from the executive office or from the legislative offices.
And the difference between the merit selection and electing judges is?
Well, you know, what we see in other states especially is how money has become a major influencing factor on judicial races. And many of my colleagues around the nation, you know, state that money has basically bought the executive branches of government and the legislative branches of government. And now they're going after our judiciary, the last bastion of fairness in our government. The merit selection system in Arizona helps to protect our courts, but we still have 12 counties, Yavapai County being one of them, that elects their judges. And while I think in general our judges are fair and impartial, whether they're elected or appointed through the merit, money can become a major factor in the future, particularly when a court may be deciding, you know, are they going to give the water company or are they going to give it to the development company? We're seeing industries coming up against each other now for our precious natural resources in Arizona.
Right. You have your own initiative that you're preparing, aren't you, Sam?
Yeah, Arizona Advocacy Network and allies have been working on a money in politics anti-corruption initiative really since 2012. And we feel that 2016, everything has lined up where we need it to be. And our allies in the state as well as nationally feel the time is right to put on the ballot an anti-corruption initiative that will address the U.S. Supreme Court's decision that weakened the clean election system by adding more money available to participating candidates who qualify, increase the disclosure, which has just become a major issue with all this unaccountable dark money being utilized to influence elections, provide for a gift ban, because if you and I aren't able to accept some kind of gift from, major sports teams or go on a fancy trip, if those aren't being offered to the public in general, then why should our elected officials who represent us be accepting those gifts? And then lastly, we're looking at a fourth policy that may have to do with lobbyist reform or conflict of interest, because we see so many elected officials, after they've served their time in public office, immediately becoming lobbyists and enriching themselves that way, or even worse, while in office, passing laws that they originate and vote on that enrich themselves and their family members.
You know, the prisons, the private prisons in Arizona, we're talking about open corruption here. At least, and we've talked about it on this show before, that as far as we're concerned, the open corruption of the private prison system in Arizona, where you have had people in the close to the governor and sweetheart deals, you know, where 100% guaranteed 100% fill rates when it comes to beds. an incredibly expensive system that's openly corrupt, where the private prisons are taking care of, taking taxpayer money in Arizona. I'm going to say it a third time. It is the most openly corrupt thing that we have in the state. They don't even bother to hide it, Sam. So when it comes to anything that you guys can, this is key. What the Arizona Advocacy Network is doing is put their finger on that issue, and that is money. In Arizona, outside money, even local money in some cases, at least, that is just
dark money. We have no idea where it comes from.
The word I'm looking for is completely subverting anything that anyone recognizes as a fair election. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Steve and Mike. The money that has poured into Arizona has had a significant corrupting influence on how our government spends our tax dollars, either for the benefit of corporations who are getting the majority of it today, or for our streets, our public schools, our water systems, our bridges. You know, you probably both recall a few months ago where there was a bridge that just collapsed on I-10. For neglect. Now, you know, that's debatable. Was that the state's responsibility or the federal government's responsibility? But the issue is the same, whether it's locally or nationally. The money is not being utilized for the will of the people, but rather to enrich corporations. And it becomes a vicious cycle. You know, the politicians get elected, some of them utilizing clean elections. They go to the Capitol. They realize that it's actually easier to just raise lobbyist money for their reelection campaign rather than going back out to the people who elected them and collect those $5. It's no easy task. And they just end up, really being bought by the corporations. Hey, both of you guys are probably aware that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Committee, is going to be here in Phoenix next weekend. There's going to be a lot of protesting going there because essentially they're coming to town to buy their legislators.
If you're interested in the protest, Sam, what would you do to get connected with that? Because the information is new to me up here in northern Arizona.
Yeah, I recommend that you and your listeners go to Arizona Advocacy Network's Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at AZ Advocacy. You can also go to our website, which is azadvocacy.org. All three of those social media platforms have information on ALEC coming to town and how they can get involved to, you know, let our lawmakers and our governor and Sean Noble, the master of dark money here in Arizona, let them know that we just aren't going to stand for this, that we're going to fight back.
Yeah, get lots of pictures with these guys. I mean, I know Arizona Advocacy Network is not a press organization, but these legislatures with the ALEC lobbyists, that needs the light of day for sure.
Yeah, it really does, and we expect to see some interesting reports in the news media come out of this. Our allies, Arizona Progress Now, run by Julie Earthly, you know, we're not just sitting idly by watching them. We will be taking action, but it's up to really, all of us and your listeners to participate in this. It's the many versus the money, and that means people need to show up.
The many versus the money. I like that. And that is what it's come down to. The money is the corrupting everything. So that's Arizona Progressive Now?
It's Arizona Progress Now.
Progress Now.
Yep. And you can just Google their name and you'll find their website also.
I liked your point, which was very simple, I think very clear, which is we don't get beautiful sports tickets given to us free as the public. You know, nobody hands us Cardinals tickets and stuff. And I think to some folks it seems harmless that all these sort of they're not mini bribes given how much stuff costs nowadays. But I think the point is that even what seems sort of harmless, like tickets to sporting events or a fancy dinner or all these things, these help begin the process that produces legislative corruption and sort of bends the system to the folks who have the money and the interest to bend the system in their direction.
Indeed. It's we are a capitalistic society, and so everything that is done or provided, the value of it is determined based on our monetary system. How many dollars is this worth or that worth? And so we know that money is used to influence the value of what's being delivered by these lawmakers. And who has the money today? Our corporations do, the oligarchs, the billionaires. That's why we see such gridlock and such extreme partisanship at the federal level. You know, I will say that there is bipartisan efforts done in Arizona. Since 2012, Arizona Advocacy Network and our allies have been able to build bipartisan support, actually, for clean elections, to advance clean elections. We just haven't been able to get a majority of Republicans to support the legislation and the efforts to strengthen the system, and that's why we're going to the ballot. But there are freshman House Republicans who were elected using clean elections because they weren't part of the money system in Arizona. And those freshman lawmakers have stood up to the governor's office and the Koch brothers, honestly, Americans for Prosperity, and they've defended clean elections in their first term.
That's great. So, Arizona is backward in a lot of ways, but when it comes to clean elections, when it came to that independent election commission, compared to really to some other states now, which are incredibly out of whack, we're doing okay, and you want to, so we're talking about voting rights now. One of your organizations, one of Arizona Advocacy Network's goals is to protect, guard voting rights, it says on the website.
And there were a huge number of suits, I guess not huge number of suits is the wrong way to put it, but there were a number of suits by the Republican legislature.
Well, just one big continuous one.
against clean elections. I mean, it went on and on and on. I don't know how much taxpayer money they spent on this futile effort to overturn the clean elections redistricting.
That was our boy. Andy Tobin led that, at least for a while.
Indeed.
I guess my other question, folks may not know, is why do you need a majority of Republicans? Why can't you have the Democrats and a minority of Republicans be in favor of this and get it through, Sam?
Well, the Republican leadership, here in Arizona as well as federally, they commit to a point that if the majority of their caucus won't support a particular policy in general, then they're not going to advance that. Now, one of the exceptions more recently here in Arizona was the expansion of Medicaid, with the Affordable Care Act. We had just a handful of Republican lawmakers go against their Republican leadership in the legislature, and Governor Jan Brewer signed that legislation. You know, had it not been for the strong Democratic caucus, that legislation would never have moved forward. And it was interesting because you had a coalition that included the business community, and some people just thought it was so wonderful the business community wanted to expand access to health care, when really the business community saw this as a profitable policy, and therefore let's support it. For example, we know, right, Walmart. Walmart, we basically subsidize Walmart around the country with our tax dollars because they don't pay their people enough money, and they don't provide health care benefits, so they're utilizing what's available now through the Affordable Care Act, thank goodness.
Yeah, there's astonishing statistics about how much per person taxpayers are doing, talk about corporate welfare to support Walmart employees. Now, I'm glad that they're supporting Walmart employees. They need medical care. They need all this support. Many of them don't make enough money. They qualify for what we used to call food stamps, even though they're working full time. So we're not talking about trying to take anything away from Walmart employees. But what's happened is Walmart and many other companies, for example, in with pollution, are able to externalize their cost onto the public. So they have a gold mine. They dig the gold out. They don't clean it up. It becomes a mess. The public has to pay to clean it up. The same thing with corporations like Walmart that don't pay their employees enough for them to get by, and so they qualify for federal programs because they're just not making enough money.
Well, we do want to talk about the voting rights that you're protecting, and but I also want to get back into to explain. I hate to jump around like this, but I do want to make sure that our listeners understand judicial merit. We're throwing the word around, but that there's two systems: election and judicial merit. What is judicial merit?
The judicial merit system in Arizona, again, was passed by the voters. It was a constitutional amendment passed by voters in 1974 to address the corruption that was being experienced during that time period, literally, you know, judges being bought off for decisions. And they wanted to, the voters wanted and continue to want today a system that shields the judiciary from the influence of money, but also the partisan politics. And so with the merit system, qualified attorneys or sitting judges, if they're applying for a higher bench, go through a selection process where they're vetted. It's a very intense and long process to make it through, and you have citizen and lawyer commissions that vet these applicants. There's several steps along the way. And the last step then is the commission will select typically the top three candidates and then send those to the governor. The governor then will select one of those three candidates. So the applicants that are being forwarded really are not being forwarded based on any partisan or ideology, but rather their credentials.
Sure, the fear is that on a straight election, that money influences the election of a judge a lot easier than you can influence it this way. Now, we both know there's plenty of politicking going on as this judge selection process, even through the merit selection process. But it's much more difficult because it is much more widespread, much broader, I guess, is what the term I'm looking for.
And what I see is that, and I think you could talk a little bit, it's not so much in Arizona, Sam, but there's dark money, massive amounts of dark money going into judicial races all over the country. In other words, there's money that is a hidden source money that's going in and turning a race that maybe cost a few tens of thousands of bucks into multi-hundred thousand or more races by all this money pouring in. And you could argue that it doesn't have any effect, but I think that it does.
Oh, it has plenty of effect. I heard the other day, Sam, and you can, that it's going to take two generations. The gerrymandering in other states, will take that the powerful corporations and Republicans have paid for state by state, legislature by legislature, that they would love to do here. And Alec, who writes the laws, and then provides them to the state legislators, the lobbyists that write the laws and provide it to the legislators. Alec is one of our favorite groups around here to expose constantly because they are such an organization that has such incredible power because they actually write the laws. But as these states fell one by one to incredible gerrymandering, to where Republicans have safe districts for the next generation. that until they get some more reasonable lines drawn, we're simply talking about congressional districts. If I had my way, we would lay a grid over each state and people would be elected that way. Our representatives would be elected that way. But the gerrymandering, the party in power that draws the lines, has been so effective, nationwide that, like in Arizona, if you have a legislature that doesn't seem to reflect anything that people want, you got 70-80% of Arizonans want to spend more money on education. Even the deal that they just made, I can say right here on radio, sucks. It sucks. They're getting less. They settled for less. It's going to be hard for people in the next election cycle as this comes up to say, hey, the Ducey is wants to give $3.5 billion to education, but it's not, it's for this citizen's perspective, it's too little, too late. It's not enough. But,
it's robbing Peter to pay Paul.
But all the teachers are saying, no, 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 quiet in the legislature. No, 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 at least it's something. At least we're getting something. So, okay, well, maybe, and that'll all play out in the next, year or so, and we'll see how that works. But the gerrymandering that isn't so bad in Arizona yet is still so heavily influenced. So
I mean, it is.
The voting rights that the Arizona Advocacy protects are just, I mean, your organization is so necessary.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. And Steve, you know, you mentioned a couple key words when we were talking about the judiciary. One was that politics still plays a part in our merit selection system. And you're right. You know, politics are just a normal part of every person's life, whether it's at the office or at home or down at the Capitol at the legislature. But it's the partisan politics that are minimized through the merit selection system. So politics is a natural part of our lives, I think, for anybody who's engaged civically. But we want to minimize the partisanship, which is a reflection of the ideological spin of a person. And that's what merit does. It minimizes getting individuals appointed who might otherwise be elected, utilizing extreme electioneering campaign ideology in a particular community. The other thing that you guys were mentioning was the voting rights and the importance of having our independent redistricting commission. I think that we'll see much sooner than two generations the gerrymandering really being impacted. Ohio voters this election, this past election, passed their own form of independent redistricting. They took away the legislators' power to draw their lines. So they modeled their system similar to ours in California's. We're seeing this take place in Florida. The federal judge down there said the gerrymandering that the legislature has done is unconstitutional.
Good news.
And
good news.
They've actually had to redraw the lines three times and resubmit them. And finally, the judge said, you know what? The court's going to do this ourselves. So that's happening. So gerrymandering and the impact it has on voting rights, you know, has been noted and is being addressed. But there's also those laws like we have in Arizona that really impede free, fair, and accessible elections. Like, for example, our voter ID laws and the number of provisional ballots being cast and not counted because people are showing up at the wrong location, or in the case of Yavapai County, they show up to a regional voting center and they don't have the proper ID. Since 2006, there have been over 121,000 provisional ballots rejected. 121,000 provisional ballots rejected. And with the increase of mail-in ballots, we're seeing a significant rise in the number of ballots being rejected, received by mail, because the signature isn't being matched up. So, for example, in March, we released what's called the Shelby Response Project Report. And people can read the entire report on our website, azadvocacy.org. But there's some alarming statistics, and I want to just share a couple with your listeners and you. In 2014, there were at least 5,462 early ballots not counted because of signature issues. In the last presidential election, there were over 7,300 early ballots rejected because of signature issues. And people are given several business days after the election to come down and verify their signature, but the vast majority, 99% of those people, don't have the time to go down to the courthouse, to the recorder's office, and to show that, yes, I am the person that signed this. And it's particularly interesting for your listeners who, you know, I believe demographically there's going to be a large retirement community in Yavapai County, and these signature issues are impacting elderly voters more than anybody else. And in Arizona, the statistics show that those elderly voters, particularly retired voters, tend to vote Republican. So this is an issue that we think our legislature may be interested in addressing because of who holds the majority there.
This
and
is
that's something that we'd like to address for, you know, modernizing how our elections are run.
So, Sam, I have a question for you here. So you vote, your signature's changed, or it doesn't look like to whoever's looking at it subjectively, because I don't think this is an objective process, that it doesn't look like your signature. And they give you a couple of days to go down and prove it's your signature and show all your ID and stuff. And you don't do that. You're busy. Something's happened. Are you permanently then basically unable to vote?
No, just that ballot won't be counted. And it doesn't mean that what will happen then, or what should happen then, is the election official should send that voter a letter that says, you know, we need to update your signature because it didn't match. There's no requirement for the election officials to do this. A piece of legislation we'd like to see introduced this year, or this next session, would be that those ballots are actually counted. Let the government be responsible for proving that it's not that voter's signature.
Great.
And then also, what we'd like to see start happening is when a ballot is not counted, whether it's a mail ballot or a provisional ballot that was cast in person, those voters have a right to know if their ballot was counted or not. You can go online and check that out, but most people don't know this. We think the government should be sending a letter to these voters saying, your vote did not count in the last election because of this reason. And then the voter can actually take steps to fix that problem. And at least, you know, I'm sure they're going to be angry, but at least not, you know, not have that occur again in the next election.
Yeah, being told your vote didn't count is really going to piss people off. But I absolutely agree with you that the responsibility of the people holding the election is to tell you if your vote didn't count and to explain to you why and give you some kind of redress, because voting is basic to being a citizen of the United States.
Well, that's it, and that's where it all starts. I worked four or five elections as a, you know, worker, and yeah, exactly right. Even if people know that they are getting a provisional ballot, it can be ugly, as it should be, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, interfering with this is and trying to minimize this. And it minimize the people's ability to vote is just so. Who was ever involved in this? Whatever individuals are involved in this, Republican or really need to be taken to task. Let's talk about. And I know, like, you're nonpartisan, but we do have the presidential preference primary coming up, and as we know, partisan thing. You got to be registered Republican or Democrat to be able to vote in March for this little straw poll that Arizona does. on the presidential preference, and it means almost nothing other than indicating an early preference. But as we've said on this show many times, and as I'm sure you're aware, there's a whole load of independent voters in Arizona. It is the biggest single group of voters in the state, and yet we're still pretending that there's only Republicans and Democrats in this very next election. Is there anything Arizona Advocacy Network can do to get people to be able to vote in this next election?
Well, we do an awful lot of voter outreach and education. And I do think that, you know, we should be clear with listeners that non-party affiliated registered voters are the largest group, but they're not the largest voting population.
Huh.
In fact, a recent study conducted by the Clean Elections Commission and the Morrison Institute actually shows that less than 10% of registered independent voters actually cast a ballot.
Wow.
So there's very low turnout by these people. But then also, those who are registered without a party affiliation, they actually tend to vote in one direction or another, left or right, consistently. So they're not necessarily partisan on appearance, but ideologically, they lean one way or another. There's very, very few truly, you know, nonpartisan voters. And something else that's really interesting from this study, it shows that voters actually like partisan labels. They don't want, or they appreciate knowing if a candidate is a registered Republican or a registered Libertarian or Democrat or Green, because it at least gives them an immediate window into that person's ideology in general. So, you know, we see that there's a group that's backed by big money pushing for another, quote, top two primary. They've kind of fluffed it up and put some window dressing on it now, and they're calling it open primaries, but it really isn't.
What's wrong with that, Sam? What's wrong with and let's explain to folks what a top two primary is, because we've done it. We've explained it on the program, but it's been a while.
We have tried.
And tell us kind of why you're opposed to it, why you think it's a bad idea.
Yep. The top two primary would essentially let voters choose two candidates in a primary system and then advance them to the general election for that runoff.
Everybody votes in one primary, essentially.
In one primary.
And both Republicans and Democrats and Libertarians are all in the primary mix, right?
Correct. And the problem that Arizona Advocacy Network has, the concerns we have, is number one, it reduces voter choice on the general election ballot when most voters are paying attention. Secondly, a top two system allows money a bigger place in the general election and the primary, quite frankly, to influence voters to pick who they want. So we generally see in primary or in the general elections when we have maybe four candidates for governor, a Democrat, a Republican, a Libertarian, and an Independent, we generally see that the two major parties are getting most of the money. Well, what top two will allow, and what actually an independent study has shown, is that had Arizona been in a top two primary in 2012 or in 2014, or in 2010, Felicia Rodellini in 2010 would not have advanced for the attorney general position. David Garcia would not have advanced to the general election for superintendent of public instruction. Both of those statewide offices, had top two been in place, would have had two Republicans on the ticket for all the voters to choose from. So it's a very deceptive initiative. There's actually another study being conducted that we will utilize next year to educate voters of what the real impact of top two means. And it doesn't mean voters having greater influence. It really means less voter choice on the general election and more influence by money.
But the argument for top two is to reduce partisanship, Sam. Is that, do you think that's inaccurate, or it's a very small factor, or what?
The partisanship is going to exist regardless. We have nonpartisan elections for cities now, and on the signs, candidates are putting their party affiliation. So while the ballot may not not show a particular party affiliation, the voters turning out are going to know who's affiliated with what. The literature is going to, it's being delivered to doors, the advertisements, the signs, that's all going to be out front there for the voters. So again, we just think it's another move to put additional window dressing on a very bad policy. And California has this, and it has done nothing to reduce the partisanship or the makeup of their assembly, their legislature, or who's actually winning.
Well, thanks for that, because top two is very seductive, and but reducing choice is a bad idea in the general election. Thanks for clearing that up. Now, turnout is 2.6 million voters, which, as this is a number I can't figure out either, 6 or 7 million people live in Arizona, 2.6 million voters. The rest can't all be kids, but that's not what we're going to talk about unless you have some information on that. But the other thing is getting people to vote. And is Arizona Advocacy Network doing, are you involved in voter turnout? I know you're involved in education, which is critical. And if you can find some ways to, the more ways you can get to people, great. But how can we get them to vote, Sam?
Yep. It's, what I have seen, in this progressive nonpartisan environment I work in is the Republicans spend their money persuading voters and the Democrats spend their money turning people out. And we believe that people are self-motivated to turn out. Democrats should be spending a little more of their resources educating voters on how it impacts registered voters' wallets. Let's make this personal. People will vote if their own self-interests are explained, and how is it going to impact their purse or their wallet? The right wing, the corporate party, they're very good at that spin, and it has people voting against their self-interest, just because of their persuasion pieces.
Always a mystery. All right. Well, listen, we want to mention real quick, we got Dave Orchinsky on the line here. This is calling from Phoenix, Arizona, representing the Arizona Advocacy Network. We also have 2 minutes left, so we want to mention our Democrats of the Red Rocks that support our efforts here on Democratic Perspective, and the erstwhile Democrats of the Verde Valley. And we can, you'll be able to find this interview and all our shows on vvid.org. vvid.org is where our podcasts do show up eventually. We also,
big issue is the huge meeting in Paris on climate change. Next week we'll have some folks coming in who've organized a whole lot of local educational programs, some of them pretty exciting with films and stuff about climate change. Let's ask Sam, as we've got about a minute left. Sam, what do you think is the most important thing that your organization does? You've got exactly 1 minute.
There's no doubt that the work we do in money and politics is first and foremost. Money and politics influences every part of our lives, policy making, government. You mentioned climate change. That's all determined by who can influence our officials and voters with their money. So that's key, and that's why we're running this anti-corruption initiative next year to address the obscene amount of money in politics, the non-disclosure of all this unaccountable dark money, and being able to allow more ordinary working citizens to run for office in competitive ways through the clean election system that really requires those candidates to focus on voters.
We're done, Sam.
And not-
Sorry.
Thank you, Sam.
Yes.
It's live radio.
It's live. Exactly.
Sam's organization.
All right. All right.
Listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.